Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Essence of Buddhist Teaching by Lama Tom Broadwater. When the Dalai Lama says love is his religion, he is expressing the very heart of Buddhist teaching. This Sakadawa Sunday, we will use aspiration prayers as our guide to that heart. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So, welcome this morning. I'm glad to see you all here. There's any number of other things you could be doing other than being here because it's such a beautiful day, and obviously there are a lot of people doing that. but you chose to be here, and thank you. Some of you have come a distance. I was just talking to Aaron. He came from Chillicothe. It's his first time here. I hope you don't mind my pointing you out. So thank you for your coming here. And know the fact that you are here creates a great deal of merit. And merit in the sense of opening yourselves up to the possibility of awakening. So thank you. Thank you. There's all kinds of reasons to celebrate today. Father's Day. I was reading in the Columbus Dispatch a little message from Jerry Revish, who is a journalist, a retired journalist. He said to all fathers, he said, be a loving man. So to all those who might be fathers here, and you don't, it's not just biological fathers, are we talking about? We can be fathers in different ways, adoptive fathers, fathers who take other people under their wing and help them. So he's advising us to be loving men. Don't be afraid to express that love, he says. Don't be afraid to show your vulnerability. So again, happy Father's Day. And since we were also each other's mothers, according to Buddhist tradition, happy Mother's Day today. So you have been my mothers too. Yesterday we had the People's Pride Parade. I heard from folks that it was a beautiful day. 700,000 people showed up and 17,000 actually participated in the parade. There was a fella quoted as saying that there was a lot of joy in that moment, but also a time for reflection. So again, we can celebrate that. Then tomorrow is Juneteenth Day. And there's lots to celebrate there too. On national radio, NPR, they said the celebration, I liked what they said. They said it's a jubilant celebration, but it's also a sacred lament because we lament the original sin of this country, and we need to work to redeem ourselves from that original sin. So there's already three holidays to celebrate. And finally, we have Sakadawa. And that is basically a celebration of the Buddha's life, his birth, his enlightenment, and finally, his parinirvana, his passing from this life. And we're here because of that life. So, lots to celebrate, and thank you for being here. So let's, one of the things we do as Buddhists is recollect our motivation and our intention. And our intention here is to wake up. And our motivation is not only just to wake up for ourselves, but for all beings. So we have a ritual thing we do say together, and it is the refuge prayer. And so we'll say that twice in English, and I'm going to do something that I've never done here in the new building. I'm actually going to try chant, and I'm horrible, so just don't be careful about that. So let's say it in English twice. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly, most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly, most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Sanje Chidang Sakchi Chugnam La Chan Chibadu Dagni Kyab Suchi Daji Jen Sok Ki Pei Sonam Ki Drola Pin Shir Sanje Chupa Sok. So let's begin by keeping a big mind, meaning a mind open to reality, to the truth. Let's have a happy mind. We've already seen four reasons to celebrate, to be happy. And one of the biggest reasons is the fact we're alive. We woke up this morning. We have one more day in which we don't have, and we don't even have that promise, do we? I was just talking, you know, we're getting older, 75. My gosh, how are we doing that? And the fact is, we are still have our minds. We wake up every morning with our minds. And that's pretty fantastic. So we have a big mind that's open, a happy mind, we're alive, and finally, a grateful mind. We're here, we can experience the truth, the Dharma, and we can contemplate it, and ultimately, on a day-to-day basis, we can integrate it into our lives. So we're very lucky, we're very fortunate. So, as advertised, we are going to do one of the prayers for Sakadawa. Lama Kathy and I have consulted earlier, and we've decided that we can shorten it today. We were going to do three or four of them, and we decided we could pare that down a bit. We've already celebrated on Tuesday, I believe it was, Sakadawa. So this is just an extra added bit. So if you'll take out your red books and recite with me, and we're even going to go shorter with this prayer. It starts on page 40. But we'll just go to the summary. And it is the, you might say, the third stanza, beginning when he. Everybody there? Okay. So like my first grade teacher used to say, speak with your outside voices here. When he, chief of men, was born, took seven steps on his great earth and proclaimed, I am supreme among beings in this world. To him, the great wise one of that time, I prostrate. He who first descended from Tushita's god's realm entered his mother's womb in the royal state and was born as a sage in the Lumbini garden. The blessed one, god of the gods, to him I prostrate. In the royal mansion, he who was worshipped by eight nurses, among the Sakya youths, he demonstrated his athletic skill. And Kapilavastu, he accepted Gopa in marriage. The unequaled body in the three worldly existences, to him I prostrate. He who showed sadness at the four gates of the city, cut off his hair at Namgad Stupa, and practiced asceticism at the bank of the Nirjana. To him who is free of obscurations, I prostrate. In Rajira, the sage subdued a mad elephant. At Vashali, a monkey offered him honey. At Magaga, he attained enlightenment. To him who is shining with wisdom, I prostrate. At Varanasi, he turned the wheel of Dharma. And at the garden of Jetta, he exhibited great miracles. At Kushinagara, he passed away into Nirvana. To him whose mind is like space, I prostrate. Thus, by the merit of praising the deeds of you, the Blessed One, the master of the doctrine, may the activities of all the beings also become equal to your deeds. May we all become very like the body of the Suchgon Buddha, and may we have retinues, life extent, Buddha field, and excellent signs similar to his. By the power of praying and offering praise to you, in the area where we are residing, may the sickness, poverty, and wars be pacified, and may Dharma and auspiciousness increase. May there be the auspiciousness of the longevity of the doctrine with Buddhas appearing in the world, the doctrine shining like sunlight, and the development of prosperity of the doctrine holders, teachers, and disciples. Thank you. So there was one part to that that prayer that sort of threw me off. Monkeys offering honey to the Buddha. That sounds a little weird, doesn't it? It's not one of the 12 deeds, but it's one of the miracles that is supposed to have occurred at the time of the Buddha. And you say, you're probably thinking, monkey giving honey to the Buddha, would that be possible? Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. When I was in India in 2016, I had the great privilege of going to Rajira, Vulture's Peak. It's a beautiful place where, according to the Mahayana, the Buddha gave the teachings on wisdom. Well, as you're going up the mountain to where Vulture's Peak is, there are signs all over the place. Watch out for the monkeys. Don't feed the monkeys. Stay away from the monkeys. So they're all up the mountain. And there's a good reason for that, because as you're going up the mountain, these monkeys will descend on you. And if you have food in your hand, they'll take it away. And if they don't take your food away, excuse my expression, but they'll pee on your head. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things going on there. So the fact that a monkey would give, instead of being a pesky beast, would actually give the Buddha something to eat is pretty astounding. And what we can take away from that is that beings who approaching or are enlightened create a pacified environment around them. A few years ago at Karmi Ling, which is where Lama Kathy and I did our three-year retreat, I was walking with Lama Karma Dudral, and we were watching these, I don't know if they were ravens or crows, but there were a bunch of birds in the sky, and they were dive bombing a particular bird that looked like one of them. But apparently this bird, they're territorial, and so when he moved in, all the others said, oh, this is a stranger, this is an alien, and they dive bombed him, and they were pecking him to death. And he would fall to the ground, or she would fall to the ground, get up, and there would dive bomb again. So me and Lama Karma were walking down the hill, and lo and behold, the victim of all this abuse landed on his shoulder and stayed there. I don't know that you know Lama Karma, but he creates a very pacified environment. And the bird came and sat on his shoulder. And we escorted him down to the Lama house. And at the Lama house, we called the wildlife folk, and they came, picked the bird up. He was very badly damaged. And they took him, and he became well. And from what I heard, they kept him there at the wildlife refuge because they feared putting him back in, the same thing would happen. So I tell you this story to tell you that a monkey giving honey to the Buddha does not sound so far-fetched. People create pacified environments. So we're talking about the 12 deeds of the Buddha. And they're listed. I'm not going to go into them. You can Google them. But what was his greatest deed? I don't know. I can't tell you for sure. But I can tell you my opinion. And my opinion, his greatest deed was that he taught. Anybody in here teachers? Yeah, there's a couple. How difficult is it to teach and actually someone retain what you've taught? It's hard. Not only did the Buddha teach, but the miraculous thing is he taught us a way out of suffering towards liberation. That's his greatest teaching. So of all the 12 deeds that we can talk about, his greatest deed was the fact that he taught, and that we, as a result of his teaching, if we follow it, that's a big if, isn't it? If we follow it, we'll be liberated. We'll be freed from the suffering we all experience. So among his teachings, what are his greatest? Again, I'm going to give you an opinion. I don't know for a fact. This is how it would be explained by a great Rinpoche. But the way I would explain it to you is his greatest teachings were on loving kindness and compassion. What's loving kindness? It is simply the kind regard that we have for one another and the wish that you be happy. Very simple. And what is compassion? Compassion is, the object of our compassion is each other's suffering. We all suffer. And so the greatest teaching that the Buddha taught us is how to love and how to be compassionate. I was in the preparation for this talk, I picked up, and you can find it in the library, a little spiral-bound copy of a teaching Kempo Karta Rinpoche, who is our teacher, who founded this center, whose inspiration created this place. He gave a talk over 40 years ago, and it was called Practice of Loving Kindness and Compassion. I was thinking that what I would do would be comment on that. And so I started reading it. And I don't do this very often. But I decided I'm not going to comment on this. I'm just going to say his words. And as best I can, you might say channel his love and his kindness in the way he would say these words. Ignore my faltering ways and pay attention to the words. And beyond that, go beyond even the words and pay attention to its meaning. And even go beyond that to what ultimately it says about all of us and about reality. So, I'm saying to you, the greatest thing that Buddha did was teach, and the greatest teaching he ever gave was on love and compassion. And so 40 years ago, Kempo Karta Rinpoche said, loving kindness and compassion play such an important role in the Buddhist approach to spirituality that one can say that genuine practice of all the Dharma is based upon the development of these qualities. It all boils down, my dear brothers and sisters, to love and compassion. We can get we do beautifully complicated rituals, lovely. And I'm going to one this week, Sadrup up at Woodstock at KTD. Beautiful, beautiful ceremonies. But when it all comes down to it, it all comes down to loving kindness and compassion. And that's what he's saying. He further said, and I'm not going to, I'm not going to try to read all of it because, first of all, we don't have time, but I would recommend you picking this up. He said, loving kindness and compassion are also the cause of accumulating merit necessary for being reborn in the human realm and higher realms. So it has karmic consequence. Then he said, these positive qualities of loving kindness and compassion are like a life force. He said, it's like the mind and the body. If there were no mind in the body, all we would have is a effigy, nothing enlivening it. It'd be a corpse. And in the same way, if we don't have love and compassion in our practice, it's meaningless, totally, completely meritless. It's our life force. And he said, unenlightened beings suffer continuously from the neurosis of attachment, aggression, and aversion. These emotional upheavals develop because of the lack, what? of loving kindness and compassion. I think you're getting the theme here. Lacking such positive attitudes and feelings, we constantly indulge ourselves, developing. Instead, the three negative qualities, the three negative poisons of attraction, aversion, and indifference or ignorance. So you're either doing one or you're doing the other, and you have to decide what it is you're doing. I'm going to finish about 15 after because I want to allow for questions, and I want you to think about what's being said, visualize what it is you think is being said here. I want you to feel what's being said, and I want you to try to grasp hold of what's being said. And if it seems ungraspable to you, I want you to ask questions about it. He further said, and this is something I've already said in a way, he said, without this basic ground of loving kindness and compassion, the Vajrayana, which is practices, ritual practice we do, would not exist. Boom. And the interesting thing about every Vajrayana practice, and I'm talking about Chinrezig, Green Tara, so forth, we always begin with refuge and bodhicitta. I don't know ever of beginning a Vajrayana practice where that was not done. So without it, it's meaningless. So he says, with the realization, if we realize the importance of these two supreme qualities, the desire to benefit all beings, great clarity and understanding develop. Look, you know and I know that when our minds are engaged in aversion, attraction, or indifference, our minds are not clear. When we're angry, we may think we're being clear, but we're not. So if we want to have clear minds, well, let's look at it this way. When you're meditating, and say you had an argument with your partner or your wife or your friend, and you go to sit down to meditate, how hard's that? The point being that through the practice of loving kindness and compassion, our minds become clear. That's why it's so important. It's not some sort of side issue here. It's not something like window dressing. It is not performative virtue. It is the heart of our practice. There are three kinds of people that we might see in our lives, that we sort of judge neurotically. First, there are people that when we meet them, we see them as superior. Sometimes we meet people that we see as being our equal. And sometimes we see people that we judge to be our inferior. What's our normal response in those situations? If we meet someone better than us, what develops in the absence of love and compassion? Jealousy, maybe? Why did they get that? Why don't I have that? They don't deserve that. And what does that do to our heart? What does that do to our being? Jealousy is such, it's green, right? I mean, there's a reason we call jealousy green. It colors the way we see life. So in the absence of love and loving kindness and compassion, our relationships to those superior to us, whether it's just in our mind or they do have superior qualities, is one of jealousy anger, resentment. That's one. So let's go to the other category of people, the people that are equal. What can develop there? Competition. Okay, so we're equal now, but... And it develops, and don't kid yourself. It's everywhere. It's not just out there, it's here. It's in this center. When I was in retreat, we started out, well, we could say, as equals, and we sometimes got into competition. You know, I did X number of prostrations today. You only did that number. So what develops there in the absence of loving kindness and compassion? Resentment, anger, and don't think that doesn't or cannot exist even in the most sacred of environments. So the third kind of folk are those that we meet that we may, for whatever reason, consider to be our inferior. And what do we do with those kind of folk? Oh, you know, they can be dismissed. I don't have to be around them. They don't have the qualities I have. They're uninteresting. And us old folks often get put in that category, silently being just overlooked. You see that. Yesterday, the mother of Ray Beach, who was a very devoted member of our Sangha at one time, came to our center. Ray had just passed, I think it was in February. His mother came along with, I don't know if it was his father, but a friend came along with him. They were at the foot, they're at the head of the steps, the top of the steps here. And Jolene, I'm going to use you. I hope you don't mind my. The man that was accompanying Ray's mother seemed to have some balance issues. And Jolene, and she doesn't like me pointing her out. She's a very humble person. Will be upset that I even mention her name. But Jolene, he was standing at the top of the steps and he probably had some balance issues. And with a very simple gesture, she went like this to the man, saying to him basically, come away from the top of the steps, you might fall. Very simple little gesture. But everybody else standing around was not mindful of this gentleman, this elderly man. What I am telling you, brothers and sisters, is it's not the big grand gesture that counts so much. It's in each moment being aware of and attentive to other beings. And offering the simple gesture, come away from danger. It's that simple. But how often do we do that? I was talking to Tim yesterday, and we were talking, well, how do we practice? How should we practice every day? And how we should practice every day is recalling, being mindful of what it is we should adopt and what it is we should discard. The man was old. The man was, from the worldly standpoint, someone we didn't have to bother with. And probably out there in the world, he would be overlooked. But I am happy and privileged to be in a place where there is at least one person that knows the graceful, loving, kind gesture to bring him away from danger. conversely, there is always the possibility that we will meet up with people that are aggressive and angry. The fella that Jolene ushered away from danger could have just as easily have said, "Don't bother me, leave me alone. I don't need that." He could have done that. He didn't, he was very grateful, but he could have said that. Would that have made Jolene's gesture any less graceful, any less meritorious? I don't think so. So when we meet up with people that are problematic, that might yell at us, might be sort of crappy with us, abrupt, angry, think of it as if you are, as Rinpoche says in his teaching, think of it as if you are standing at the precipice of a canyon. You can jump in and get angry in return. You can do that. But you fall off into, and I'm going to use another analogy, you fall into a rabbit hole. I'm mixing metaphors there, but you get the point. The only way you and I are going to avoid falling into that canyon of anger, the rabbit hole of resentment and anger, the only way you and I are going to avoid that is everyday practice. Practice. Doesn't mean you do it perfect. We won't always have the graceful gesture that brings people away from danger. We won't always have birds flying down on our shoulders. We won't always have monkeys giving us, you know, honey. But I assure you that every time you show that graceful effort to be kind to another being, the next time someone is disrespectful, angry at you, you won't fall into the rabbit hole, you won't fall into the canyon. So, again, summarizing, the greatest deed the Buddha ever did was teach. The greatest teaching he ever gave was on loving kindness and compassion. And the way you and I are going to imitate the deeds of the Buddha is by offering and being aware every moment. And of course, I say every moment, and I know that it's a practice, and sometimes we mindlessly go about our business. I know that. So be gentle with yourself and recognize that you have these opportunities. Seize them when you can. So finally, what I want to do now is what's called Tong Lin. Tong Lin is on the breath, taking in the poisons that exist within ourselves and others. And because we have this heart that right now is pretty veiled to us, that we can't see, we still have that heart. So in our imagination, we take that suffering on. And as Rinpoche would say, when it hits your heart, it's like water on a hot iron. It just sizzles and blows away. And on the out-breath, we're going to offer our love, our kindness, and our compassion. So if you don't mind getting into a meditation posture, most important thing to a meditation posture is having a nice straight back. Everything else is less important. But the back nice and straight, and if you're sitting in a chair, it's good to keep your back away from the back of the chair so it's nice and straight. and just relax. Take a nice deep breath. And visualize for a moment yourself and all the acts of unkindness and lack of compassion or indifference that we display daily. Breathe it in the form of dark smoke, and breathe out what you have but don't realize, your love and your compassion for yourself. So it is recognizing you have these qualities. Don't deny it. Don't run away from it. It's okay. But don't do as we usually do, fall into some sort of self-hate. That's not helpful either. Breathe it in, recognize it, and breathe out your love and compassion for yourself. And we'll do this for just a few moments. Now, what I would like you to do is to think of those in your immediate environment who suffer, just like you. And maybe even you've jumped over the precipice, gone down the rabbit hole with them, gotten angry about something. But see, their suffering is just like yours. Take it in the form of dark smoke and breathe out your love that you really truly do have, and your kindness, your loving kindness, you really do have it. Give it to them in the form of bright light. Don't be afraid to do that. Now what I'd like you to do is to recognize, to really recognize that all beings, from the monkeys to the old men in this world and in other worlds, suffer. Take on their suffering in the form of dark smoke. See the infinite number of beings in front of you who suffer. And maybe at this point it's only, if I could, I would take on their suffering, and that's okay. Say that. If I could take on your suffering, maybe I can't now, but I would if I could. And in the form of dark smoke, bring it into your heart center. And breathe out your love and your compassion in the form of bright light to all the universe of beings. So now just rest and think something beyond what is me, mine, and I. For just a moment, try to transcend that in a relaxed way. Just relax. Thank you very much. Appreciate your attention, your kind attention. And as I promised, we have about 15 minutes. If people have something that you saw in the talk that was helpful, something that you felt, or something that you didn't quite grasp that you would like further discussion about, be glad to do that. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Lama Tom. You mentioned the three poisons a few times, attraction, aversion, and indifference. Could you talk a little bit more about indifference? It's not clear to me how that manifests in my life and how I might get it under control. Thanks.
Well, in I think, Tim, in the very ways I spoke, I think these afflictive emotions, they're called, manifest in the very ways I spoke about. You know, I was indifferent to the, and I'm not beating myself up, I'm just stating a fact. The man was, could have fallen and hurt himself. And I was indifferent. Some things I really love to the point that are distractions that take over my time inordinately. And those attractions are not helpful towards our progress to clarity, to open-mindedness. We live in what's called the desire realm, and good grief, there are any number of possibilities here for us to get sidetracked on, and we all have our favorite flavor, and we all have to recognize that and be careful, be mindful. And as far as aversion or, you know, we don't like to admit it, but we're more often angry and resentful than we like to admit. Indifference doesn't, it sounds not as bad as the other two, but there it is. In fact, it is the root of the other two in some respects. So I think, to answer your question as best I can, they manifest in the way we act, in the way we think. Sort of like that. Good morning.
Good morning, another elder. thank you so much. Appreciated all the insight and wisdom you shared. But it brought to mind a little quote that I have at my home that I just so treasure. Well, there's two stories. One is, first, that I was impressed when I found out that Mother Teresa, when she went to Oslo to receive the great honor of Nobel Peace Prize, and she, in her typical fashion, and she's surrounded by all these presidents of nations and rulers and on, and she just hobbles up, and then she says, none of us can do great things. And that seems sort of like the, some of the people would have been like me, like, oh, you obviously don't know who I am. And she said, but we can do small things with great love.
Yeah.
And as usual, she nailed it. And then the little quote that I have in the house, it's in the bathroom so I get to see it every morning, is a best friend of the Buddha, Saint Francis, and it simply says, I'm having one of those senior moments.
That's all right.
It'll come up. Preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words.
Yeah. Isn't that right? Yeah.
And that really, yeah, to me, was very much what you were saying and what my dear friend did with, spoke silently, but from the right spot, and it was heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Other thoughts or questions or curiosities? If not, going once. Again, I want to thank you so much for being here today, and coming from distances and taking your time out from other things. So I appreciate that. So let's say the prayer, the dedication prayer, dedication of merit. Like I said, y'all got some merit here. And we could walk out this door patting ourselves on the back saying, how good I am, I was here. And that's not the point, is it? The point is, as a result of our being here, we're a little bit more open when we go out that door and into the world to the possibilities, the infinite number of possibilities to show grace, loving kindness, and compassion. That's what this is all about. It's not about patting ourselves on the back. So, by this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. So again, thank you very much. And before we jump up and go about this world, the busy activities, let's just take a second to pause, just for a minute. We won't jump up. We'll just take a minute to pause. Relax and take a couple deep breaths because you got work to do out there. Lots of work. So my prayer is that you courageously, in the next week, offer small gestures of love and compassion to the most unsuspecting of people. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.